Amen. Thank you very much. Just want to check if we all have a copy of the agenda in front of us. All of us, we have. Anyone who does not have? All right, so we all have. Shall we then, we just opened with a prayer, and I would like to take this opportunity and greet all of you. Sorry for coming late. Promise you, it's not out of my own making. It's a meeting that has overlapped to this one. But I left it on, at least I'm done there, so I had to come out to come out for this one. Sorry for that, we'll try and improve. It's not right, not good. But greetings to all of you, and indeed I would like to welcome all of you to this meeting. Thank you so much for making time for this meeting. It is our meeting. Not only the portfolio committee's meeting, I want us to develop that meeting. It is our meeting. Meaning that we will all have to focus on the issues at hand and look at how best those issues can be addressed. Well, we are meeting two sector education and training authorities, namely the local government CETA and service CETA. To us, CETA has a huge role to play in our country, and they have to implement the National Skills Development Strategy and increase the skills of people in this sector. CETA should contribute to the raising of skills level and bring skills to the employed or to those waiting to be employed in the sector. However, the National Development Plan cited various problems in the CETA. Some of these are poor governance, poor administration and financial management, no proper monitoring and evaluation system. These challenges have led to some CETAs to be placed under administration, including service CETA and LG CETA. Local government CETA is still under administration until March 2015. I hope it gets out of it before then. Seemingly, these problems have not disappeared, and one hopes that there are plans in place to steer the CETA in the right direction. And those plans can only come from you. And I'm sure you've also seen this. And you're working hard on this. Without good and proper plans, I don't see how you can go to get out of the problematic situation. Today we are here to hear about your financial and non-financial performance for the 2014 financial year. But also, I'm sure you also expect us to hear about the action plans that you've put in place that will turn the situation around. Taking into consideration that the President did not meet his word in his State of the Nation address when he said, we are now on the radical transformation, the socio-economic transformation phase, which all of us have got to understand, and we should all move from the same way we then. Before there was no radical, and anyway there was the first phase, and in the 20 years that we've been in government, we've experienced these problems that I'm talking about, and we're still experiencing them. But the 20 years gave you an opportunity to learn. Now on this second phase, two more time to learn that. If you've just come in again, you'll have to hit the ground running. Radical intervention, your radical plans. Everything has got to start from radical. So we've got to understand this money clearly. All of us got to move from the same way there. And not forgetting that it's not about us. We are building a nation here. So it is about this nation having to rise to greater or to higher altitude and participating successfully in the economy or in the development. Only we can understand this. Not about us, as we move away from self-interest and put organizational interest above those self-interests. They have not helped us in the 20 years. Today we are sitting with a problem. They have not helped us. Now we must all see the reason to move and improve. And you can't be slow now. This is a radical socio-economic transformation phase. Thank you very much. With these words, I really want to welcome you all to this meeting. And please feel free and relax, as this is our meeting. And that does not mean that we should not engage on robust engagement, so that we can come out with solutions that will take this nation forward or to new heights. We will then move on to item number two, which is introduction. I'll start with myself. I am Yvonne, these are my Christian names, Yvonne Nkwezikosa, but I'm commonly known as Binky. I'll be so happy if you can call me Binky. That's my name. Alright, I'm the chairperson of the committee. Let me start an honorable quiz on your side, and then we'll then proceed.
My name is Jim Tekana, member of the portfolio. Head of the portfolio, Paris Chair.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Nkadimi Mfida, member of the portfolio committee.
Good morning. My name is Suara Ed, member of the portfolio committee.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Julie Killian. I'm a member of the portfolio committee.
Good morning. My name is Sipombas.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Swangile Mchumu, a member of the committee.
President of the
Authority,
member of the committee.
Yusuf Kassam, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Nababang, a member of the Local Government Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, my name is Mamoran Mazigabe, coming to content advice.
And I'm coming with Commission.
Can you imagine any committee assistant?
I don't become the researcher.
Good morning, my name is Omei Tosholenge. I'm here for
Good morning, Chairperson and members. My name is Naba Nandela. I'm the administrator of the Archivita.
Good morning. My name is Neo Lucera. I'm the acting COO from the Archivita.
Good morning, honorable members of the chair. My name is Temba Mahondi. I am chairperson of the board of the services sector. Thank you.
Good morning, members, Madam Chair. My name is Liesl Kirschig. I'm the acting CEO for the services sector.
My name is Andrew Nwoko, the CFO of Census Media.
Morning. My name is Paul Samini, Senior Manager at the Census. Paul Samini. Senior Manager, Levies and Learning.
morning. Samantha Brown. I'm an AA member of the Service of CETA.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Pam Schneeman, and I'm an Accounting Authority member of the Service of CETA.
Good morning, my name is Okanyu Pikachin, representing the Finance Department of LG CETA.
Good morning, my name is Joe Ramesi, representing LG CETA.
Morning, I'm Sposi Soblamini, PLO with the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Morning, my name is Bulele November, the intern in the Department of Education and Training.
Good morning, Chairperson and the members of the committee. My name is Amanda Buzo of Oga. I'm the acting head of legal services within the Service of CETA. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Yawande Febe, Senior Manager, Organizational Compliance.
Apologies.
one from the Honorable Minister, who is unable to join us. Due to his the trip that he has undertaken to Sweden for work-related citizenship. We do want to benchmark ourselves with some of these progressive countries and then so that we can come back and add value to the work at hand. So thank you very much. We also have received an apology from the Deputy Minister. Who is attending to the Tshwane University of Technology issues. There are topical issues, we all know about it, and indeed this was necessary. So we have received the proof. Do I have your acceptance of the apologies, Honourable Member? And Mrs. Gadime? Sorry.
Thanks, Chairperson. We accept the apology.
Yes, Chairperson. Actually, we don't really need to accept the apologies because it is the executive and we understand that they're not members of the portfolio committee. That's just what I wanted to say. But we note their non-availability. Thank you for the information. Thank you.
Chair, I'd like to again express my displeasure at the absence of the Minister and the Deputy Minister and the Director General. Thank you.
Honourable Bozoli's request is acceded to. We take note. Is noted. Thank you very much. Shall we then proceed with the briefing by the Local Government Sector Education and Training Authority? And okay, we start with LG CETA. Shall we all listen carefully to all those punctuations, the underlying messages? Some messages you have to, you know, but indeed that will be in the best interest of this meeting so that indeed we have fruitful engagements and then also help us to make recommendations to the House that will assist you with your work. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. We have introduced ourselves. The LG CETA, just by way of background and context, is, as you said, Chairperson, one of those CETAs that are currently under administration. One of two now has been the only one up to recently. The CETA was placed under administration on the 20th of March 2013. What that means, Chair, is that the annual report we present here today is an annual report of the year, the first year, full year, for which the CETA was under administration. That naturally meant that a lot of attention and a lot of energy and resources and focus went into sorting out the issues that had led the CETA to be under administration. And I think as we go through the presentation, both in terms of the financial performance as well as the non-financial performance, we will be talking to some of those issues. The outline of the presentation, very briefly, I will go through the strategic overview. We are going to share the presentation with my colleague. The CFO on my left will deal with the financial performance. The acting CEO on my right will deal with some of the non-financial performance, and I will also deal with some of those. We will try, Honourable Chair, as the members have both the annual report as well as the presentation, we will take it as read, so we will not necessarily go through and read line for line. We will try and move speedily through the presentation such that we at least have enough time for engagement, as you said, Chairperson, so that we are, one, able to account, but we also have enough time to be armed by the expectations of the committee. Very briefly, the scope of coverage of this organization, as members may be aware, we are responsible for the whole of the local government. That means all the different types of municipalities. That means all the entities that are fully or partly owned by municipalities, as well as all other things like parks and all those things. So that just speaks to
Now, the one other area that also falls under the LGC that I'm often gets forgotten is that of traditional leadership. We also have a mandate for facilitating skills development for traditional leaders in the country. The strategic overview, very quickly, the CISA was established with all others in the year 2000. Initially, it was both the local government and water services CISA. In the 2005 relicensing, the water part of the CISA was moved to the energy and water CISA. I think we all know that subsequently the CISA then moved to be falling under the executive authority of higher education and training, in Monday in 2009. And then, like all others, was relicensed for a period ending in March 2016. The vision of the CISA is to be the foremost CISA producing an extraordinarily skilled and capable local government sector. And I'm sure all other members will agree that that is solely needed in our country at the moment. The mission is to promote and coordinate skills development initiatives and strategic sectoral training interventions. And we do that through the normal work that all CISAs do, conducting sectoral skills planning and research, developing and implementing learning programs, monitoring and evaluation, and dispersing grants. The values of the organization are Ubuntu, transparency, sustainability, professionalism, and integrity. I will not speak to it in detail. The strategic area of focus, now this just speaks broadly to the areas within which we fund and run learning programs for the CISA, the CISA for municipalities. This covers areas such as infrastructure and service delivery, and I think those are the core technical services that municipalities. I noticed that this slide is not very clear on the presentation, but then I said it's going to be the number of the presentations before that. So there will be things like water, roads, road construction, all the technical and infrastructure type work and competence of municipalities to fund. And so that, for that, we do things like leaderships, we do programs, we offer partnering. That's just there. And then the second one is the area of financial viability, and I think the Auditor General, every year around this time, the Auditor General releases their MFMA report, and I think the whole country continues to be concerned about financial viability in municipalities. The CISA spends a lot of resources supporting municipalities in this regard. The other one is community-based participation and planning. I like this one because for me it's a big part of also the back-to-basic things, a big part of what goes on in municipalities when the disconnect between the citizenry and the municipalities in terms of what the municipalities are doing. We also focus on that. Management and leadership, as I said, covering the political leadership, the ward councillor, covering the Section 57 municipal leadership, as well as the traditional leadership. And then, of course, within the municipalities, the committees that are responsible for, the training committees that are responsible for facilitating skills development, we also capacitate them, as well as the SPS themselves, the employees of municipalities that work on skills development. Now, Jefferson, before we get into the meat of the presentation, we want to reflect very briefly. As I said, when the CISA was placed under administration, there were many things that had gone wrong, and throughout the day we'll be speaking to those issues. But one of the issues that we quickly realized, a CISA being, like all others, a partnership between the social partners in that sector, between the employers through their organized formation, in our case, through SALGA, labor, as well as communities and government. We realized that this CISA, part of the problem, part of why it was then able to get into the very dire situation that it was in, was that it had become very, very divorced, very disconnected, that's the right word, very disconnected from the people that it's supposed to be serving, from the sector, and as such had lost touch. I mean, some of the first initial engagements that I had with the stakeholders, a lot of them were saying, and these are very key stakeholders in the sector, a lot of them were saying to us that, you know what, if this CISA were to disappear tomorrow, we are not going to miss it. That's how the CISA has become irrelevant to us as the people that it's supposed to be serving. So, as part of one, selling the vision of what we're trying to do with the organization, having had to inherit it after it was placed under administration. But number two, and more importantly, also learning from them as the people that we are supposed to be serving. Learning from them how we ought to be serving them better, where they think we have gone wrong. As well as to then, for everyone, to get all of us to commit to say, moving forward, this is how we are going to make the system work. Because, as I said, the system is a partnership. municipalities, and all the other stakeholders, the local government and the FISA and government. We then undertook, we spent a lot of time and resources going to all the stakeholders. We had about 7 roadshows in the provinces. We had hoped to cover all the provinces, but in the end we realized that we had actually covered enough to have substantive information in terms of way forward. So the stakeholders taught us a lot of things, which also partly explain the performance that we report here today, but also which then placed certain demands on the organization in terms of how we transform it as we move forward, based on and informed by the feedback and input that we have received from them. So the answers, like I say, I won't go into the detail, but issues revolve around visibility of the CISA, and I know that even parliamentarians have in the past expressed their frustration at the fact that the CISA don't seem to be visible, the impact of the CISA does not seem to be felt in communities, and these are the issues that were prevalent in those engagements. Others revolve around our own processes and organization, which speaks to the capacity that we must build in the organization, the speed with which we turn around and respond to applications, our accessibility as an organization. So all of those issues are what are now informing the work that we are doing in the organization. I will then just pause and call on the CFO to present the financial information, and we will come back later on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. I will be presenting the financial performance information of the LGC for the year in question. And my first slide shows the income of the CISA broken down into different categories of income as described by regulation. Altogether, the income of the CISA was 447 million for the year in question, having increased from 319 million in the previous year. Into that income is also interest income of 22 million. It also increased from 18.9 million in the 2022 year. The graph shows that in 2013-14, discretionary income has increased rather drastically, while mandatory income has declined. This is a reflection of a reduction in mandatory jump portion from 50% to 20%, and increase in discretionary jump portion from 20% to just under 50%. In terms of the new CISA master regulation. In the second slide, we show the provincial distribution of the levy income. The graph shows that Gauteng is the leading province in terms of the contribution of participation into our sector, averaging across the 3 years about 30%, followed closely by KwaZulu-Natal and the Western Cape at around or just under 20%, and then the other provinces at lower percentages. Levy income is distributed, as I just said, into 6 categories. The leading category is the discretionary grant income, which was 238 million in the year in question, constituting about 53% of the total income. The second largest portion is the mandatory grant portion of 128.5 million, constituting 29.9%. Then followed by investment income, which is 22.1 million, and then the smaller other sources of income, such as penalties and interest, when you put in mandatory grants are grants which we pay back to local and municipalities upon submission of the training report by this municipality. So this is the money we pay back immediately upon submission of the two documents. As we show here again, the monetary bank distribution follows our sources of income in terms of public subsidy without any taking.
Transaction of the
So in terms of the information that the AG wanted to support, how many of these career guidance panels you were able to distribute in the two supply the documentation supported by the attendance register? I'll touch on those discussions at the end. Program number six, establishing a credible institutional mechanism for skills planning. The target was to have three sector forums. We managed to have two sector forums. The reason for this variance was that the agreements were signed with IMACHE and FALDA. However, the outstanding information on project allocation delayed the signing of these agreements. But I can now report that these agreements have been signed with these two institutions. Program number seven, establishing a credible institutional mechanism for skills planning. The target was artisan assistant projects, and that one project for $150. We were not able to meet this target. There were no special projects that were initiated during this period to support the success due to capacity constraints. I think when the administrator touches on the HR presentation, we will discuss the issues with our capacity constraints in more detail. But suffice to say that a lot of the issues that resulted in our poor performance in a lot of these areas were because of the issue of capacity. We will touch on that. Program number eight, Chair, establishing a credible institutional mechanism for skills planning in terms of the HRC and LLF training. We were supposed to have had one HRC and one LLF for the 2013-14 year. We were not able to have the forums. But we actually improved on that, and we've already started having engagements with our stakeholders in this regard. I'm just going to summarize the issue of bursaries, which is program number 10. The target here was to give 100 bursaries for the environmental health bursaries. Only 12 bursaries were awarded in this field. But we gave a lot more bursaries as a total number of bursaries that we were able to give, but we were not able to actually direct the bursaries to this this qualification for the health environmental services. Because during the year in question, the focus actually shifted to enable us to give bursaries to a lot more students. So the idea here is that in terms of the directed bursaries, when we advertise the bursaries, we will specify what type of applications we want from the learners who want to engage with us on the number 11, in terms of the soft skills, the target here was 1,950 learners. The target we were not able to meet, but I'm happy to announce to the committee that in terms of the target, we have already started training 1,890 learners in the water process controlling project. So we have actually been able to address that target. And finally, Chair, the last one, the one for our research report accepted by the board, and the target here is that we are not able to achieve that because the research was not conducted due to a lack of capacity. Chair, I just want to touch on the slide which talks about the financial performance of SST. This basically addresses the findings from the Auditor General. It talks to, and the theme of the findings from the AG in terms of all the non-performance related information was really about us not having adequate order, not showing adequate reasons for the variances between the planned and the actual achievements reported in the period. So in terms of the findings, the first one is regarding the SCA forum. That is one of the ones that we were not able to meet our target. But the plan here, or the action plan, is that the provincial capacity will be added in order to reach the target. In terms of the sector agreement, the CISA has now signed a funding agreement with FALGBC, and we now have a formal relationship. We actually had a series of meetings with FALGBC. We had a meeting with them in KZN last week, so we do have that relationship that has now been formalized. SST Research, we've entered into an MOU with the DUT, and we are also in partnership with the CSIR. The career guidance manuals, I've already discussed that. I'll touch on item number 5, which is the artisan assistant project results. We've got an RCR project which was piloted in the Free State. We've got 300 learners who are actually participating in this RCR project. The
pilot project is quite successful now and we want to then implement it nationally. The HRD and their training, the project is currently implemented by their agent LGBT, as I will discuss, and performance monitoring visits. A monitoring tool has been developed and the provincial capacity is going to be beefed up in order for us to support this one. Environmental health bursaries, I have touched on that. The SIP project, the result was that the water process controller project is currently underway. We have said that we've got 1,890 learners who are currently going through this project. Core of research reports, the CETA is currently developing the implementation strategy and the report to be provided to the co-op. And finally, appropriate systems and systems are being put in place to collate, verify, and store performance information to ensure that valid, accurate, and complete reporting of actual achievements against planned objectives, indicators, and targets. This was one of the main reasons for our findings. Unfortunately, the findings are a poor reflection on our numbers, but they do not accurately address the level of work that has been undertaken. So what this is saying is that in terms of the supporting documentation that the AG is going to require from us in order to support our work and to support our performance, we are actually going to address that by way of an action plan. Chair, I'd like to now touch on ECQA, our Education, Training and Quality Assurance Unit. The purpose of this unit is to build an education and training provider system that better serves the needs of our local government sector. We've got 10 strategic objectives which fall under the ECQA department. And again, Chair, I'd like to propose just to summarize a few of these key issues. Where we were successful is the first objective, where the target of having a QMS aligned to the ECQA criteria was met. If I touch on the second one, we were meant to have had a target of 10 qualifications. We were not able to meet this objective of the qualification. The comment is that there's a variance of 10 qualifications that were developed, and this is something that we need to look at, and this process took longer than expected. We were already in progress of actually finalizing these qualifications, but at the time of the audit, we had not done that. If I just proceed, Chair. The issue of the 10 MOUs, we had a target of signing 10 MOUs. We managed to sign 7 MOUs with our APT colleges, and 6 MOUs we signed with our APT colleges, and 1 MOU we signed with our higher education institution. The next target of approving a new learning program, the target of 100 programs were to be reviewed and approved. We managed to review and approve 52 of those programs. I'm going to go through program 4.7, which talks to the verification of learner achievement. The target here was 1,000 learners to be verified against 4 qualifications. We managed to verify 763 learners. And there was another target of 6,000 learners verified against a mid-standard. The achievement on this one was 4,907 learners to verify, so we managed to do quite well in terms of that target. RCL, which is program 4.8, I already touched on that in terms of the pilot project that we had running in the free stage, where we now have 300 participants that are participating in that RCL project. The last slide is talks to programs 4.9 and 4.10. The first one, which talks to the improvement and the focus on quality of provision to online provider networks to support their performance monitoring. The target was one online provider network to be established. We were not able to establish this network. The online monitoring system was not secured at the time of the audit, and the survey was not done. So this is something that is in our action plan for this current financial year. Finally, Chair, the impact assessment of qualifications and program implementation, there was a target of just one impact assessment, and that was also not achieved because of lack of capacity in the ECQA department. I would like to touch on the summary in terms of the findings from the AG. The finding was that no adequate reasons for variances is very similar to the finding in SSP.
no adequate reasons for variances between planned and actual achievements reported in the annual report were given for 100% of the targets that were not achieved. The interventions that we currently have in place is that the performance targets have been revised for all ETPA processes and they have been benchmarked against our previous year. The ETPA is revising its systems, procedures, and our forms in order to ensure efficiency and make sure that controls are in place to ensure that the reporting is accurate. The third intervention in this department is that the indicators are processed in a manner that that is achievable and measurable, because that was one of the problems that we had. And finally, our performance targets are now smart. I think the CFO only touched on the fact that our targets were not measurable, but now we've made sure that they are smart targets. Our learning programs department chair, the purpose of this division is to improve the skills workforce available in and to the local government sector through facilitating the provision of quality training. In terms of learning programs, there's a total of five objectives in the learning program department. This is where we had a lot of challenges in terms of our performance. The learning program department is a department that touches on projects and the implementation of projects throughout our commercial office. Prior to the establishment of the PME, the project management unit, which I'll touch on in a little bit later, the responsibility of ensuring that programs are implemented across the country rested solely on the learning program department. So this is where a lot of the performance information is quite dire in terms of the funding from the Mr. General. I'm going to touch on the program 3.2, which discusses the increasing the number of skilled employees required to support improvements in municipal performance. Our target for this was 4,650 officials to be enrolled in priority skills. We only managed to enroll 1,816 officials. One of the main reasons was obviously capacity, but in terms of the volume of documentation that is required in terms of getting information from the learners, I think that was the biggest challenge. The programs were identified and unfortunately the tenders were issued, but we were not able to evaluate those decisions and those tenders. Two tenders could not be awarded due to a bid crisis exceeding the budget amount. So as much as we tried to ensure that we meet the targets and we advertise tenders to service providers to actually assist us with membership programs, we ended up having to cancel those tenders, which had a very significant impact on the targets. The third one, 3.3, improving the base level of general education in the local government sector. We had a target of 3,162 areas. We were not able to meet this target due to lack of capacity and competing priorities, which resulted in the project not starting on time. A training provider has been appointed. We've appointed a company called Project Literacy to look at this AS program, and we've got 3,000 learners which are participating in AS. In terms of the artisan and technical skills project, that's item 3.4. We had a couple of targets for this one. The first target was 624 artisans to be enrolled, 400 employees and 400 unemployed and 224 employees, and there was a total of 720 employees trained on technical leadership and 180 unemployed. So there's a couple of targets that we have to meet. Suffice to say, Chair, that we also with the department have been well in terms of the artisan program. We issued tenders and entered into partnerships with APT colleges. These are in process, and again, this is something that we have to take into account. But I'm very happy to announce that in terms of our last program, which talks about improving the labor market access for designated companies, our target was 2,250, and we managed to exceed the target by just over 20. We actually got 2,272, so that's the one area where the learning program department is not very well. I'm going to just summarize in terms of the second last program, which is 3.7, which talks to support of improving democracy through civic education, counselor training, world education, and youth development. Our target Madam Chair, is just the discussion regarding the findings from the AG, which stated that there was no adequate reason for the variances between planned and actual achievements reported. The interventions in the Learning Program Department, no specific and detailed checklists have been created to ensure full compliance from municipalities in submitting the required documentation. What this means, Chair, is that in terms of us funding programs for municipalities, we are very strict and stringent in terms of the documentation that requires from the municipalities. We have found that the reason for our dire performance in a lot of these areas is that the documentation we see from the municipalities is either incomplete or incorrect. And a lot of time has been spent toing and froing between ourselves and the municipalities to firstly request that they, number one, submit the documentation. When they do finally submit the documentation, it's incorrect and we will need to assist them in collecting, which then has a negative impact on us making those payments through to municipalities in order for them to commit to the children. So that's been one of our biggest challenges. But it's something that we're looking at in terms of the capacitating our ACF and also improving on the relationship between our provincial offices and the ACF for them to facilitate that the documentation arrives to us on time and that it's also right for us. All projects are now loaded onto our project portfolio office. This is a new tool that we procured in our PMU office. We engaged a private service provider to assist us with participating in the project management office. So we have now managed for the first time since the speaker was brought on board to put all our projects on an online system where we can now better have where we can have better control in terms of the monitoring of our projects and assessing whether our projects are actually being implemented nationwide. The provincial offices are to play a stronger role in the collection and the submission of required documentation. I've already discussed that between themselves and their municipalities. Funding agreements has also been a very big issue. This is the precursor to us making those first payments either to our municipalities or to our service providers. The role of generating funding agreements rests solely on the management to sit in the learning program department, and it's quite a tedious and very involved process. The funding agreements are a legal document, so for every single funding agreement that is generated, it requires a person to actually spend quite a lot of time to ensure that there are no errors in the funding agreement. So that's been a very large blockage in the learning program department, but we managed to actually find a resource which has helped us to standardize the agreement so that we only complete the aspects of the form that speaks to the name of the provider, the amount, and what program that is also funding for. So now we're able to actually generate a lot more funding agreements because it's almost automated. Type of document and record management processes are being implemented to avoid loss of information and compliance. This was a very big finding also. Where the Auditor General wanted to sample information that we had reported, we were either not able to find the documentation on time or documentation went missing between ourselves and our provincial offices. So we've got a very tight document management system that is now going on. Finally, Chair, I just want to touch on the PMU. The PMU is a new department, as I mentioned earlier on. It was set up in November last year. So at the time of the audit, I think, or rather at the time that this annual report was prepared, the PMU was only 3 or 4 months into establishment. We have appointed a private service provider to assist us to operationalize the PMU. We've got a structure in our PMU. There's a governance document that has been defined and it's already been signed off. The PMU strategy, which is defined in this table that is in front of you, we've got 4 key pillars that speak to the objectives and the strategies that the PMU follows, and these talk to the governance, compliance, support, and continuous improvement within the PMU. So all the projects that are currently running and are currently being implemented are now being run by the PMU. So the Learning Programs Department is working very closely with the PMU department to ensure that the reporting, the monitoring, the evaluation, the implementation, documentation between projects, between the activities that are being done by the provincial offices, by the municipalities, private service providers, is all centralized and is also reported to the PMU. The next slide just talks to the PMU organization. We
have a TME structure, and as you can see, there are only three people, four people because we've got two project managers. There are four people currently sitting under the TME structure, and we've got a couple of vacancies, but the administrator will touch on the vacancies when we go through the HR. And then the last slide is just on the status of some of our key projects. We've got the NLPE projects with our non-independent entities. We've implemented projects with CBOs, NGOs, and public entities for various programs and learnerships, but with a total of 51 service providers. Bursaries, a total of 170 bursaries were issued, 44 to 18 fund ones, and 126 to the unemployed. Sure, we've got a few ministerial flagship projects which we are meant to be responsible for. We've got projects in the Eastern Cape, we've got projects in UNCZN. We also have work integration learning, which we also report under the PMU. And in terms of these ministerial flagship projects, before the PMU actually took over the projects, there was absolutely no movement in terms of these projects. But I can now report that there's quite a lot of movement. Our national project, as we've spoken about, the 1,890 learners who are going through the water and wastewater process control training. AS, we've got 3,000 learners doing AS. We've got training of our ACS. I mentioned the fact that we need to capacitate our ACS in order to ensure that there's better communication between themselves, municipalities, projects that need to be implemented, monitoring and evaluation of those projects. We've got training of our ACS. And finally, we have the pilot project in the food safety, which I spoke about on RCL. Thank you, Chair.
And then, Chair, perhaps to conclude in the last 5 minutes, I know we've really taken long. And we forgot, not forgot, but wasn't sure if we're supposed to. And apology from our HR manager, has taken really ill, what had to be put off. So I'm quickly going to go through some of the HR and slides and then conclude. The area of HR and the capacity in the organization, the detail is in the presentation and the annual report, so I won't go into the detail. But one of the biggest problems or challenges with the organization has greatly improved but still continues to be the capacity within the organization, the human capacity, the numbers of people, not having enough people on board, not having people with the right skills on board, with the right expertise. So that continues to be a big challenge here. We work tirelessly at it, but it's one of those things that I'm sure members will accept, that you change with time. You can't, I think there are rights, there are processes, but there's also correct things that you need to do. You can't, if you inherit people who may not possess the requisite skills for what needs to happen, you know, you can't write them off. You have to work with them and assist them and get. So a big chunk of the functionaries in the organization it requires a lot of time and effort to get the organization to function at its optimal capacity. I think, and then of course, when we came, there was a very lean, very outdated structure in terms of organogram for the organization. So one of the first things that we had to do, we spent a lot of time consulting the unions and approving and developing and approving an organogram. That was the first thing that took time. After which we then spent a lot of time migrating the people who were in the organization onto the new organogram, and then instituting all other processes. Of course, as we're doing that, we're busy with things like doing job profiling, all of those things, and implementing performance management systems. So all of those, together with the recruitment that is underway, is what has taken up a lot of time during the year under review, under the human resources. And it continues to change. You would have noticed that we still have some vacancies. We have employed a lot of people. Our process of recruitment have taken longer, partly because we have had time that was to find the right caliber of people. We have to run processes more than once to find the right caliber of people. We have at times found the right caliber of people but have not been able to afford them. And so we continue to look into the issues of the human capacity of the organization. So we've got that slide that deals with the challenges, especially the issues that we found, which, as I said, we then moved into adopting the new organogram partly to address those issues, and did all the other things that the detail is in the presentation. We've got the slide, of course, that talks to the reporting in terms of expenditure on personnel. Already spoken to this. So where we now are, Chair, is that we have recently rolled out a performance management system. We are now working very closely with our people under learning and development, and we continue, I think, especially with the executive level. We are quite advanced in terms of filling up those positions, and we have filled up many project managers, as Ms. Lisela referred to. But our structure, Chair, requires that we phase it in, and that's part of the continuing challenge. This sector has not been performing properly, optimally for a long time, such that when we then went out and engaged our stakeholders, they told us the type of support and the type of visibility and the type of work that we need to be doing to support them. We then sought to put together this organogram that we spoke to, which we believe is the optimal in terms of addressing the needs in terms of what we ought to be doing. It's a very important sector. However, that then comes with financial implications, such that our salary bill almost triples if we fill up the structure all at once, and therefore we had to find a way of phasing it in. We spoke about, of course, Chair, being administration, and I must mention this, we also spent a lot of time on it the last time. Being administration meant that when we came, and I was just reflecting as Ms. Lisela was going through the performance information of the various departments. Many of the managers left, SSP manager, the ETQA manager, those that were there prior, they left shortly after administration for various reasons. Many of the provincial managers, we have about 6 provincial offices, some left voluntarily, some left following processes that inevitably have to be undertaken in terms of administration, forensic investigation, all those labor relations. So that in itself is a very serious blow in terms of capacity. But we also reflect on that, and it's something that has taken up a lot of our time, taken up a lot of resources. Most of those processes are now concluded. Some continue, but outside the organization, but we still continue to have to deal with them. It's a matter that I'm sure members may want to explore further in during the discussion. And then lastly, Chair, I really feel that we've taken too long. I'm not going to spend time on this, but perhaps just to mention, I said in all the public platforms, one of the things that will assist the organization to move forward is to modernize and harness the use of information and communication technologies to do everything that we do, to run ourselves, the back office, to run the operations, make us more efficient, interaction with our service providers, interaction with our stakeholders, and most importantly, this proper contract and document management systems that assist us to avoid a lot of the problems that we have had now with the Auditor General in terms of documentary evidence to support our performance. So we've already put the framework in place and already done what the framework needs to be done, and we are now moving on to, we recently concluded an assessment, a proper data assessment of all our operations and all our current ICT infrastructure, what we should have in terms of where we want to take the organization, and we are now moving into. We are actually, one of the key things that has come up is that this sector is probably the only one that still uses manual submission for workplace skills plans. I don't know about others. I know our friends from Nesto are much more advanced than us, so are many other sectors. The other sector still uses manual submission, hand written, well typed, but manual submission. And we are now moving to automating that, and most of what we do, Chairperson. So I'm not going to get into the detail on ICTs. And then lastly, Chair, to conclude, is really to say that we've come a long way. The CETA had a disclaimer prior to administration. One of the key things that had to be done was to ensure that we don't do that. We've managed to achieve that. We've achieved a lot in terms of building capacity in the organization, but a lot more needs to be done. We've moved the CETA away from what had come to characterize its failure to comply with legislation, the submission of legislative documents, this committee is new. The previous committee would have known that the CETA was unable to submit strat plans on time, was unable to submit annual reports on time. We will now, for the first time, Mr. Mahambi, in a very long time from what I can tell, that the CETA is going to have an annual general meeting scheduled for the 5th of December. I'm sure the committee members would also be invited to that. And we continue to work very closely with our stakeholders because we believe correctly that the CETA, like all others, is a partnership between the various social partners that operate in the space. And we are very, very fast steps in moving towards concluding, as you were saying, concluding the period of administration. We started now engaging the stakeholders on the new constitution for the CETA. Once that is signed off, we will start the process of appointing the board. And we are confident that we will would have done what was expected in terms of the mandate of the administrator. Thank you very much, Mr. President. Thanks to my colleagues.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, you have been listening to an elaborate report by LG CETA. I will now open for engagement. I see Ms. Killian, Mr. Sweda, Ms. Nkunu, Mr. Mbata, Ms. Ngadime, Mr. Kasim, and you said you'll be the last one. And then, come again, and then Mr. Keka, in that order. But please, you see this report is long. I do want you to be short and to the point. But as you raise issues, if you could also come up with possible solutions to those issues. Thank you very much. Short and to the point, and then we also talk about possible solutions. Ms. Killian, over to you.
Chairperson, that's quite a huge task that you're offering us now to come up with solutions. Chairperson, because I would like to start comments to ask the LG CETA. We understand that you've come a long way, but local government is in dire straits. Minister Pravin Gordhan has announced the Back to Basics program, I believe, which will have to inform your strat plan going forward significantly. The question that I want to pose to you today is, what is the relevance of the LG CETA? If it is closed and the money is transferred to NSFAS to help educate more South Africans to take up positions after qualifications achieved through our university system, etc., what is the impact going to be? Are we not going to have a significant change in the way that local government is performing once we have adequately qualified people in place? Now, the question that I have is, Chairperson, if we look at the plan, it appears that the LG CETA is not focused. I may be wrong, Chairperson, but it appears that they're not focused. We're doing this and then we try to achieve, because we set absolute impossible targets in terms of numbers. Now we quickly see the end of the year is coming up. Let's quickly put certain people through training. Now, what is the impact? That's the question. And nowhere do I see anything that will assess your impact on change management in local government. So I'm extremely concerned, Chairperson, and I want to start with the Auditor General report. And first of all, I just wanted to say on page 43, the Auditor General has expressed a serious concern about the discretionary grants reserves. Now that links to inadequate information and systems and all of that. The Auditor General has also indicated that it is not convinced that your reasons, and you have submitted some extenuating circumstances, mitigating factors, but is it adequate? Should you not go back to the drawing board and redefine and develop a very simplistic, very focused strat plan? You don't have the capacity, you admit that. You have to work with what you have. Now we're going to see a doubling or tripling of the salary bill with more expanded, and we're going to see provincial offices, etc. Are you not repeating some of the functions of other bodies in the education sector? You know, I don't think the focus is unemployed youth as a concern for all of us, and skills transfers, etc. But we have within local government salary components, you know, people who are working there. We have people without requisite qualifications. Is that not where you should start to really help build the capacity of local government? Chairperson,
North Carolina.
Yeah.
You know what I'm going to do? Let's control this session in this manner. I will give you a second bite. Let's allow every member at least a minimum one and the maximum of 3 questions so that we share this cake. Does look like, you know, it's a nice cake to share.
Chair, yes, I wanted to ask a question about the forensic.
I'll allow you that one because I have not spoken about this before. So 3 questions per member, then you'll get a second bite.
Chairperson, it appears that there's lack of adequate leadership and consequence management. Your executive is not reporting to the accounting officer, and that is resulting in investigation. Now, I want to know how far are these investigations, and what was the scope of the investigation? Has it anything to do with irregular or possible fraudulent activity? And by the way, there is also a contradiction in the annual report, which I will point out later, Chairperson, in terms of dismissals and resignations. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your questions. Next, Mr. Suela.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Through your presentation, admit that you never met many of your own set targets, ranging from all the goals that you set for yourself, which were inadvertently not smart per se, and with people of your caliber at the helm, you could not detect that these goals cannot be achieved at the onset. It's a worrying factor, administrator, because when you came in, you were supposed to turn the situation around, but it appears very little has happened during the tenure, let alone the fact that you have moved from a disclaimer to a qualified audit opinion. But in all the other aspects of the organization, you seem to have failed this money. You couldn't keep records, simple things. And that needed the Auditor General to tell you that you need to keep records. That is worrying indeed. Now, perhaps I just want to ask, is there a reason for the LG Center to exist? That's the question that I would like to know. And perhaps are you living up to your own vision, which you set to achieve? And finally, Chairperson, because you said you should ask very quickly, how many municipalities, as per your mandate, you have supported in the past year? Thank you.
What came up sharply? Is there a reason for LTC to talk? But you know, because you come from within, so you will then tell us so that we, you know, were able to understand these matters, because you are inside there. Help us to understand. Next.
Thank you, Chair. Let me first note the contribution made by the entity to NSFAS, to infrastructure development, and to a certain extent, skills development in the local government.
and further add that the MDP states that the CETAL should play a role, a more effective role, in the production of skills that are required to meet the immediate needs of the employers. With that in mind, it's just the chairperson, we don't have enough time. I just wanted to paint a picture with what one is getting from the presentation that was just done to us with regards to the targets. I have looked at the three programs. Your program one target achieved out of seven. Program two, 11 targets, five not implemented, one deferred to 2014, 2015, five underachieved. Program three, eight targets, five not implemented at all. Program four, 10 targets, one achieved, two not implemented, seven hugely underachieved. Chair, you know when one is telling you these things, you understand them better. If you are the presenter, you may not notice. I just wanted you to understand the seriousness, the underachievement which is reflected in the LG CETA. Administrator, can you please explain this poor performance and also share with us your plan of changing the status of the entity? The second question, in your program 3, page 25, the target for veterans for unemployed graduates was 350. The entity supported 436 learners. How was this possible? And what impact did this have on the program budget? Because now it went overboard. The last question to Department of Higher Education and Training. The administrator contract should have ended by the 20th of March 2014, but extended to the 20th of March 2015. No, it's just 12 months. Was there performance assessment done to establish whether the administrator has delivered according to terms of reference of his appointment? If yes, what were the outcomes of the assessment? If not, what informed the extension of the administrator's contract for another 12 months? We will come to the solutions, Chairperson. Thank you.
At least I'm being promised this hope, giving me hope. Thank you very much, Nest. But what sharply came up from this one is, Administrator, you were appointed and your mandate was turnaround the system. Do you have a turnaround strategy? Right, next.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to have three questions. Two of them are directed to the administrator. You were previously linked to the office of the minister as a chief of staff. And I'm sure it must have occurred to you when you were moved, specifically to assist in this system, the political stress that the ministry had about this system. And it must have occurred to you what has to happen. Now, under normal circumstances, when you are an administrator, you are actually a curator. Your intention is to make sure that all the curses of the organization are quickly eradicated. Under a normal plan, you should have gone there with a 10-point plan, stand placing, strictly dealing with all those issues that have inherently visited the organization in a bad light. I don't seem to gather that. There is a great relationship between the state annual report and the previous annual report, insofar as the failure and the consistent failures. Now, you have to take yourself away from these things, because yours is to quickly find solutions. For instance, one of the greatest indictments of the South African local government situation is that we have not been able to replace skills, critical skills. You know, the old apartheid used to have those old white African guys who would sit there at technical services until they die. We don't have them anymore. Those guys who will sit there at water until they die, we don't have them anymore. Those environmental experts who used to sit in those departments until they die, we don't have them anymore. Here you are with the mandate to enroll a couple of environmental officers, stroke, for a degree or a diploma program. You don't do it. Now, I ask myself, why can't we just move this money to NSFAS and target universities of technologies with these programs and then hand over as speedily as possible? Two, what's the percentage of the municipalities, rural municipalities, or what you would call densely rural municipalities, who have actually contributed to your fiscal? And also, in a scope of 1 to 10, how many of these rural municipalities do indeed claim for purposes of their own development? Because maybe also that will talk to the capacity. For instance, I would like to get a sense of the O.R. Tambo District Municipality, which is the biggest rural in the country. You spoke, not you in particular, but the CFO, you spoke cordially about open-ended questions that you found, but you do not say to us how you have resolved them, how you have tended to pull that plug. What are those open-ended contracts? And last, Jeffrey, not least, what are those items specifically that were listed in the irregular expenditure? Because you seem to be very, my honorable here says, Cage, I think you seem to be very romantic about it. You take it for granted that irregular expenditure cannot be mentioned in Parliament. It's a very serious offense. You have to come straight with us. I'm coming back here, that's me.
Thank you very much. I know I've been in administration for almost more than 20 years. I don't remember coming across the word in administration romantic, but I decided the administration language. If we can stick to that language. Thank you very much. Next.
Thank you, Chief.
But thank you, Mr. Mbati. You raise very critical questions. Thank you. Mr. Kassim?
Thank you, Chair. I think a lot has been said, but there's a lot that hasn't been said. But I think the administrator himself said that he was taking very long. To yourself, Chair, I don't think he's taking very long just in this presentation, because he was appointed over a year ago, in fact, a year and a half. And when I look at this, the budget for the local government CETA being just short of R500 million, if you had to take that budget, you would be able to fund every single student at the University of Fort Hare. Every single student. You will fund them their full studies, their accommodation, their transport, their books. And you'd be able to take specific skills and you'd be able to pump them into our municipality. Now, looking at these targets, Chairperson, number one, the targets themselves, you're saying we need to offer some solutions. I think the main solution here is that, maybe leave with that, but the role of the local government, CETA, I don't think, in my opinion, in some of these targets, it's not relevant. It needs to be tightened and the budget needs to be cut and the money needs to be funneled differently. But if you look at these targets, they are very, very vague. For example, we need to increase access to occupationally directed programs, address the low level of youth and adults and human skills to enable additional learning, increase the number of programs offered to designated target groups as well as broaden the number of designated groups targeted, access to occupationally defined programs. They are very vague targets. And most of them are not, it's been mentioned, I'm not going to repeat it, most of them are not achieved. In fact, you just see none, none, none. If I have to look at people, when I tally them, for 20 of the targets, nothing has been done at all. And then when I look at some specific target, it does not relate to the budget. So let me come to some specific questions. When I look at the income statement notes, over 5 million is then spent on travel and subsistence. But you've only made 121 visits as compared to the target of 540 visits when visiting these municipalities. How do you then rack up a bill of over 5 million rand in travel and subsistence? In fact, I'm tempted to ask, where are you staying while you are here in Cape Town? Because this is money that is supposed to go out to develop skills, to develop our people. They do not have jobs, they do not have opportunities. Our municipalities are not providing services because they themselves have people in CFO positions, for example, that do not even have a qualification at all. And now we are racking up these type of bills. I want to ask specifically on that, how do you rack up such a bill? But in terms of what you've achieved, what is it, one-fifth of what you have achieved? 20%. Surely the budget, the expenditure should be much less in that regard. The second question. When I look at the statements of the Auditor General's remarks, there's multiple remarks. Of course, as I heard your presentation, there were many, many excuses that were given. And the reasons are in the report as to why can we not achieve X, why can we not achieve Y. Of course, I do not agree with those reasons, and I think the Auditor General himself has said that, or they do not agree that those are sufficient reasons. But very critically, when we look at the qualified opinion, there were material misstatements that were not corrected. Now, it's a very simple process through yourself, Chairperson. The Auditor General is able to find there are misstatements in this and this regard. They will say, go and correct them. Why were those misstatements not corrected? Because I fail to understand sometimes it's a process. It's not something that the Auditor General comes to an opinion and then it is delivered. There's a process. Considering that, Administrator, you have, when you are given the task, you do not have a board that you must report to. So you are able to have the flexibility to go and appoint people that can get a job done, particularly understanding the urgency of that. So perhaps it's a two-pronged question. Why is that not corrected? But more than that, and I think maybe leading into what your answer would be, why is it that we do not have the type of skills, if that was supposed to be turned around, to be able to deal with such matters? Because there are simple things, when you are doing your account, there are simple things that must, the basics that must be in place. And understanding that there's been such a huge underperformance, but there are only 4 suspensions and 1 dismissal in terms of your report. Then there are 15 resignations. I want to understand, and I want some more detail on that. There are 15 resignations. There are critical posts that are not filled. There are some here that are even acting. Why are they not filled swiftly? You had the flexibility to do that. I want to understand the reasoning behind those 15 resignations. And I want to be able to understand when there's such underperformance, It is not only monitored in an annual report. It must be monitored on a continuous basis. Why are there only four suspensions and one dismissal? Or is there nobody appraising your employers? Or how does that process take place? My last question, Chair.
Mr. Kassim.
I have asked two.
You know, there were so many loads.
Yes, it was one APC.
Loaded. Oh, my God.
Okay, Chair, I will leave it at that. I will have a second bite.
Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for your understanding. All right.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Firstly, Chair, you see, it's problematic that we should think that because a sitter of sitters do not perform, that it should be standard that we should just take money from the sitters and send it to the NFR. It's wrong. That is wrong. It's wrong. What has happened this year? Because of scarcity of resources in NFR, that sitters were seen as a pool to just take money and bring it there to the NFR. It's wrong. Because legislation has defined a specific purpose for sitters. By legislation, that these sitters are supposed to deliver these services to the nation. Now, in this country, when something does not perform, it just is. You go to the pool. Like a machine, you take from there, and then it's normal. It's wrong. It's an irregularity. It's not supposed to be like that. By treasurers, this money is allocated to go to a certain purpose, to achieve certain objectives. And unfortunately, we're paying those people. We're paying those people, but we keep on taking, they're not achieving. And I think maybe we should have a broader discussion as a country whether we need them. Completely here, just close it. Not this thing every year, a chairperson, we take this money as normal, put it there. Let me leave that discussion, Dr. There, if you support me on that. The second one. I think last year, I was happy to think that I must come to this committee today, because last year, I think you know, I read many issues in relation to this. I think. Must be in a formal environment, administrator. The first wrong thing here, Chairperson, the Auditor General lifted up immediately, said leadership. That's what the Auditor General is saying. The unfortunate part of his administrator is that it seems the fact the evidence were given by you, by the Auditor General, that you are not supported by your affairs of management. Because one, the action plan that we put in place was not implemented. The recommendation that we put in place were not implemented. Therefore, Chairperson, meaning we do not have leadership in this matter. The second aspect, I wanted to ask, in page 46, under annual financial statement, the Auditor General says that we do not have internal controls. And I still remember last year, I raised it very strongly, the issue of an internal audit unit. Has it been established? I still remember last year I raised it. There was even a view of having an external company, but why has that been implemented? If just basic, I'm not a financial person, basic financial statement, financial records and everything are kept, I want to know, what is the role of the CFO on a day-to-day basis? When a CFO goes to work, 8 o'clock, what is the role? What does the CFO, like every day, does? Meaning you are a little bit, I'm a harsh person because I'm a product of course of high school. I want to be polite, I become so harsh that we do not have a CFO. Now, what action are we going to take to this? Because we can't continue in two financial cycles with the same problem.
what actions are you going to take in relation to the inability of the CEO of the institution to implement the decision last until I come back. There is a forensic investigation. Isn't that last year? When is the date, when is the actual date for conclusion of that forensic investigation? Or are we as a committee immediately going to get a report? I'll come back. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much for all the questions. Okay, Ms. Nkadimeng? Okay, Ms. Nkadimeng and then Ms. Gekhan Sergan. Okay, Ms. Nkadimeng?
Thank you, Chairperson. One of the powers and duties of the administrator is to submit monthly progress reports regarding the effective functioning of the LG Center. And then according to the Auditor General, the administrator failed to comply. And then I just want to know what is the reason for non-compliance. Is it because maybe the administrator does not have capacity? And if it is not, what is it? And the second one, Chairperson, the main reason for the non-achievement of targets is it is reported being because of the capacity constraints now and due to the resignations. Now, at what level were those resignations and what was the cause of those resignations? And then the third one, the last one. And one of the things forwarded by the Auditor General is that the staff members did not understand the financial reporting framework and performance information requirements. Have these staff members been trained in financial reporting? Do those staff members have financial qualifications? If yes, why is this problem? Thank you, Chairperson.
Intervention, Honourable Member Ketana.
Chair, done something very interesting that I would like to comment. This is not my question, so you can start counting after.
No way.
No, the gentleman before Ganymede is right when he says it's wrong that the CETA is not using the money allocated by Treasury. But to be honest, I don't think he's right when he said, in fact, to take it somewhere else where it can be utilized with any regularity. Because all over the world, there's cross-subsidization, and I'm sure he has said about it. A department or a section of government that can generate income or save, when it can't use it, it gets used by those that can use it at the time and are needing it. So that way, cross-subsidization issues all over the world in government. My question, number one, when you've got so many people leaving the system and you say some volunteered, some resigned, you don't know why, administratively, isn't it that that's a simple tool, the way you use an exit form? In an exit form, you ask, why are you leaving, what are the reasons, and so on. And at the end, you, out of the 50 people, you'll know all the reasons that they'll give you for leaving. So were you using this? Because to be honest, I think it's just a simple and straightforward, which is a standard thing for a lot of companies. Number two, local government. We've heard that all the people who were trained, artisans, engineers, mainly African engineers, some black, when job preservation allowed them to be exempted to be trained as artisans, when Soweto was built, for example, townships were built all over South Africa. Those people now have run their course, and a lot of them have gone on to pension. So we needed to train a lot of new artisans for and engineers for local government. How do you feel when money is there to do that and you're not doing it? You know, if it was training between you and private sector, say because of the legacy of South Africa, maybe they are racial hangups. That's why private sector is not willing to take up skilled blacks into their companies. But there is government where there's opportunity, which is our government. How come you're not training the necessary skills that are needed, even in public sector, the sector that we are in charge of? Just lastly, because I can feel you are already impatient. Where do you get this system of CETAs? Which country? Because in South Africa, it is just somehow not chilling. Where did you get it? Where did you hear about it? Because here, I'm about to say no. So maybe if you can tell us where it has worked, better practice somewhere, we can have patience and say, ultimately, it will work here. Because here, it's just bumbling all the time.
Can I take it that you're done?
Two more.
No way. All right, thank you very much. I think I've covered all the members. Can I also add three questions? I know, Chair, I'm supposed to drive, but I'm also supposed to clarify myself so that when I drive this thing, I must move from an informed position. Now, obviously, when you were, almost like you were deployed there, to deal with a crisis in the LGCTA, so yours was a crisis intervention. Now, Baba, in a crisis intervention, you then say the administration intervention is now 18 months underway. Doesn't sound like you're responding to a crisis. 18 months, and this is how we're talking, and this is how the CETA is still looking. Crisis intervention, so supposed to be different. Here, you deal with it differently. Move very fast, quick, put. You know, whatever institutional arrangements, and then situational analysis, and then you know, looking at the guests and then coming up with your turnaround so that you can deal with this crisis. So that one you see, it's a comment. But then in your presentation, you say you were expected to put about offices in all the provinces. Now you talk about offices that were put in six provinces. Am I right? Six provinces and all the resources went there. What about the three provinces? Because to us that's where you're supposed to start putting up all the offices in all this, so that all the nine provinces can benefit from this facility. All right. One honourable member said, indeed, as you were discharging your duties, you were able to achieve, I think it's 14%, because auditor general's report says you were able to achieve 86% of your target. That's the auditor general. And for now, I choose to rely on this report. Now, 14%, and indeed, and for these 18 months, you've been paid. This is what my father told me, I must end my salary. Now, to me, there's no value for money. Are you able to explain? There's no value for money. You've been getting a salary, but there's not been any work done. There's no impact. And you know, we've moved from your output base to outcome base. There's no impact. Why? Because obviously when you were deployed there, you already knew what the problems were there. Yours was just to validate and then come up with
a plan that will turn the situation around. I think that's my second question. And then on the organogram, you say in September, I think the structure was adopted. Am I right? Right. And then you then further say yourself, the structure is quite an ambitious one. That you go in there to intervene to correct, and then you come up with an ambitious structure. Does it make sense? Ambitious structure. And then on this slide, you say the new organizational structure has headcount of 130 triple salary bill of LG Sita. Right? I mean, the ambitious structure, and then this one, there's a contradiction. Okay, if there's no contradiction, you clarify yourself. New organizational structure headcount of 130 triple salary bill of LG Sita. Remember, yeah, but also you were coming from administration. Now, you know of this, it's a fiscal policy that says we've got to have a meaner or a less administration budget in favor of service delivery. And then you come with ambitions and you want to take more money to yourself and then you don't work. Can you explain? Doesn't make sense. But remember, we want service delivery. It is about service delivery. A lot of people are complaining about local municipalities. Poor performance. I think you are to blame because you have not risen to the challenge to assist so that these people can be capacitated and run these municipalities effectively and efficiently. Over to you.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thanks to all the members. I've noted all the questions. A lot of them are directed at me. I'll respond to all of them. I've asked the CFO to go first with a few that relates to the financial part of things, and then I'll spend time on the rest.
Thank you very much. The essence really of the question to the CFO derives mostly from the basis of the qualification as captured by the Auditor General in his report. What the Auditor General says, I suppose, the agency did not maintain complete and adequate report and reconciliation for discretionary grants with their commitment disclosed in Note 22.1 to the financial statement for the current and prior year. Okay, the impression that I get members are deriving from this is that there was a complete breakdown in terms of record keeping in the organization, which is not the case. These records pertain to what we call the commitment schedule. The commitment schedule is a schedule, as the name suggests, of all the contracts and agreements that the CETA has entered into from its inception to date. The commitment schedule shows what contracts we've entered into, how much we have paid out in a particular year, how much we have entered into in the new year, and what is the residual amount remaining in the state. It is correct, Chairperson, that our systems unfortunately are still manual, as we have just indicated. We are capturing this commitment schedule of in excess of 700 contracts manually using an Excel spreadsheet. Unfortunately, in so capturing, errors crept in. One, the Auditor General found that we did not capture all the contracts in the commitment schedule, which is correct. And we were given an opportunity, therefore, to go back to the entire population of 700 odd contracts to make sure that they are entered into and they are part of the schedule. Unfortunately, given the time at which this was happening, there were still one or two contracts that were not captured simply because contracts move around the organization. Operations use the contract for operational work when we pay them out, when we contract them, and when we run the program. And then finance, we store all these contracts. So in the process of compilation of the schedule, a handful of contracts were not included, and therefore resulted in the AG findings. Some contracts are not included, and therefore they could not conclude that this is the complete schedule of the organization. I also referred to the open-ended contract, which was also contributed to this schedule not balancing. These open-ended contracts relate to contracts entered into in the prior year, not in the year in question. But they remain in the contract in the commitment schedule because these contracts are still valid, and therefore there were payments made against these contracts. So technically what you will have is a situation where you have a contract that does not have a value. It says we shall utilize your services as and when we require to utilize your services, and we shall pay you for the work performed. So there is no contract commitment value, yet there is an actual payment against this contract, and that creates an imbalance in the commitment schedule, which is what is the Auditor General found. So none of these contracts continue to date. They have all since been cancelled or not utilized. So we are hoping that this imbalance going forward is going to be eliminated. But it's an imbalance deriving from the legacy projects that were entered into by the previous management. The question is also about internal control. The Auditor General says we did not implement the system of internal control. That is correct, Chairperson, but I want to add that when the administration team came in, basically we found a dysfunctional organization. We almost were starting from scratch as though we are establishing a new organization. In the year in question, we had to develop all policies, procedures and systems relating to all the operational work of the organization, ranging from finance, operations, and HR. So all of these processes were only developed and finalized by the end of the financial year. With effect from the beginning of this financial year, these are now in place, and therefore the whole internal control problem has been abated. I think I've covered the gist, Chair, that relates to finance and the basis for funds for qualification.
Internal audit unit?
Internal audit unit, Chair, I think in the past, as it was reported, was that we did not have a functional internal audit unit. We do have it now. By law, we are allowed to acquire the services of a company to perform internal audit function for the LG system. So rather than employing internal auditors in the LG system, we have the services of a company that perform internal audit for the LG system and its functioning and process.
Outsourcing, which company is that?
Thank you, Chair. Let me now attempt to deal with the and I'm sure members would have noticed some of the questions were repeated, some overlapped. So I'm not going to deal with groups of things. If by some chance I miss anything, I'm not, I should be pointed out and I'll come back to it. I think the first big question was, what is the relevance of the LG CETA? Should the CETA still exist? What would happen if the CETA disappeared? I will state my own views personally as well as in the current role in terms of what I see on the ground in local government. But I'm sure in the end, and I know that there was a specific question that was directed to the department, I'm sure the department themselves, who are the custodians of the system, may also wish to comment. I think the CETA and the local government CETA in particular, given the very, very dire situation indeed that has been spoken about in local government, has a very important role to play. I think this CETA has to be placed under administration because it was failing to play that role. And I think, yes, for various reasons which I will touch on, we ourselves who have this mandate of turning it around are perhaps taking longer than we all would like. But I think and I firmly believe that once we are done with the work that needs to be done, once the CETA has been restored to the type of organization with the type of skills and capacity all around, human, technological, and all of those things, we can and indeed we will make the meaningful difference that this CETA needs to do. Must remember, if we route the money as one suggestion was made to NEFAS or to the NFF, well, I think the suggestion was specifically NEFAS, which we have done, by the way, Chairperson, we omitted to report that we have funded NEFAS, and thankfully the other member mentioned it,
to a tune of 50 million rands, which amounted to bursaries for 491 students. So our target of bursaries is understated by that. I thought I would mention that. But if we were to close down the city and take all the money there, I think it would make a very good contribution to those young people who come through the institutions of higher learning and get the qualification. Yes. Would they necessarily go into local government? I guess means would have to be devised to ensure that, unlikely. Would we miss many other aspects of capacity building in local government that the CETA is responsible for? Yes. We would. I doubt through network batteries we would be able to assist traditional leadership, which we have a very important role in assisting, which we are doing. I doubt we would be able to assist Oma, no data, who work in municipalities doing all sorts of menial things, who need IA training, who need RTL, who need all these other things that the CETA is doing. So my short answer, Chair, is that notwithstanding the challenges, I don't think we should, as the saying goes, throw out the baby with the bathwater. I think we have a very huge challenge to fix this organization, but when we do, when it is operating optimally, it has a very important role to play, and it will actually show impact in our local government sector. I'll pause for now on that one, Chair, and then we can always come back to it. The second question that was asked specifically, a group of questions or a few questions by members, is around the forensic investigation. And I'll link that with resignations and all of that. Chair, when we came, we instituted the first forensic investigation into supply chain irregularities. It started last year, May-ish, June-ish, into supply chain irregularities. Such investigation tends to do kept on growing and growing, but looking at supply chain irregularities. As a result of that, what has been reported, the disciplinary processes that were instituted, specifically around people who worked in the supply chain, some people who worked in provinces. So it led to those things, and the report is there, Jefferson. It shows, to some extent, I still felt, personally not being an expert in forensic matters, I still felt that it might have even itself had some shortcomings, but it showed to some extent what has really been happening in this organization. As a result, one member says, I casually said that people resigned. I did not say we don't know why. I said for various reasons, and perhaps we should now do away with the diplomacy. A few people who were on the verge of being charged, or at least that the forensic was pointing to the fact that they had their things to answer for, naturally would resign and leave the organization. If required, we can supply all of that information to the committee. We actually, out of frustration, Chair, it is intense. One person resigned and served notice. During the notice period, we felt we had enough to institute proceedings against that person, which we did. Unfortunately, the legal process itself, to my personal disappointment, the legal process then taught us that once a resignation is actually a unilateral act, once the person resigns, you don't have jurisdiction over them, there's nothing you can do. So a lot of them, many of the managers, perhaps we're not very particular about this. Yeah, so I'll touch on different things. The resignations, we have 6 provincial offices. I'm saying I'll touch on different things because I'm realizing here that I'm actually also touching on the chairperson there. When we came to the CETA, there are 6 provincial offices. The 6 provincial offices are servicing the whole country. 3 offices are clustered. Gauteng and Northwest is one office, so those 2 provinces are serviced by one office. Mpumalanga and Limpopo is one office. Free State and Northern Cape is one office. Our mandate, what we sought to do, informed by what the stakeholders were saying, was to ensure that we are visible, we touch on all of them. So we have now opened a satellite office because the Limpopo Mpumalanga office is in Pretoria, which is a big anomaly for us. We have extended, because we are only now opening further offices, we have extended the list where we are up to the end of this financial year, beyond which we would have opened offices in the provinces themselves. What we have done so far
is to open in line with what the department was instructing all staff to do, a satellite office in Mobane, Southeast African College, which assists in that area. We are now in the process of opening another satellite office in another college in the Eastern Cape, because the Eastern Cape is one of the big provinces. The office currently is in East London. We'll open another one in Newton Haight in the East Cape Midland College, and we'll open another one in KZN. The office currently is in Durban. The satellite office will open in Richards Bay at the Umfolo Africa College. So we are doing that now to make sure that by the end of this current financial year, when we report on it, all of this work of expanding. Of course, and I'll come back to this point, of course, all of that comes with the resources. So let me not lose my check. So the forensic, the first one was that it touched on leading to resignation, it touched on people being charged, and it was supply chain things. That was done and concluded, and the process is instituted and also concluded. As I said earlier on, unfortunately, people involved in such things will always play the processes up to the end. So some of those processes are currently continuing, but they are now either at the CCMA, and I think one will soon be going to the Labour Court. That's on the first forensic that we did. The second forensic that we did, realizing that the rot in the organization was not only in the supply chain, which is more of the services, what the organization consumes in terms of services, but that there were serious also challenges with discretionary grant funded projects. Because there typically we would either offer a grant to a municipality who then runs the process, appoint people to do the training and all of that. Of course, our own processes as a CETA should pick up when there are such when there are problems, whether there's ghost learners or whatever the problems are, but they don't always do that. So we then started also learning from other CETAs, looking into, and we picked this up. One of the things we went through very quickly, one of the things we had to do as part of our sector skills learning research was to do what we call a tracer survey to find some of the people who have benefited from the CETA funded training and establish from them how the training has assisted them. And as we're doing that, we picked up that there are problems with finding the people that the CETA has trained. The more you look into the documentation, you realize that there are things that need to be looked into. You know, fortunately in South Africa there are standard things. You know that if a person is a female, their ID number is supposed to look like this. So if you have ID numbers of females assigned to male in terms of names, then there's a problem. So we then realized that we also need to be looking into that. That we started, we ran a long tender process to find people to do that for us. That is now coming to an end at the end of this November. That's the last report that I received. We will receive a final report at the end of this November, which we can then share, you know, to say what is it finding in terms of that. So we've done two. So the question was, what was the scope of this forensics and what were they doing? Those are the two sets of forensic investigations that we have done. If there is more detail that is required, I can come back to that. I'm trying to make sure that I don't miss anything. Chair, members are correct. I share the frustration of the members that the pace of turning the organization around is not as fast as it ought to be. I think that we can debate whether the approach was correct or not. When we did the first forensic investigation, it revealed a lot of things. That's why I said the CETA, again coming back to this, had a structure where there were three so-called core business managers, as the presentation said, SST learning programs and ETQA. And you had six provincial offices, so that's 6 plus 9, and then you had the CEO. I'm not talking the support services, the CFO, which was not in place, and a few others that needed to be, but were not, there was no HR. So if we look at it like that, then you had the second thing, which Member Panda might also remember from the last time we presented, what we mentioned. Then you had this organization
give an example. The SSP unit, just to be very specific, in the SSP unit you had a manager, you had one officer, and you had, I think, about four or so administrators. Now that's the unit that is tasked with doing sector field planning for the entire sector of local government, with doing research, with providing this thought leadership that a CETA ought to be. The manager soon left after we arrived. The practitioner is still there. The rest of the employees, as I said, not for reasons of their own or for their own making, but where are innocent young people who have neither the skills nor the qualifications. I mean, to be fair and to be accurate, the average of that layer that I'm talking about in this data, it's not right, it's not correct, it's not a fault of their own, but the average is metric or less, people who work there, who are supposed to do all this work. I'm painting a picture, Chair, of a member said we should have come in guns blazing, and I was of the view that it's important to deal with the rot, it's important to deal very ruthlessly with what is wrong with that organization. You, however, cannot always assume that all the people who either are unable to do what they are supposed to do or who take wrong approaches or wrong outlooks and attitude to things, you should not necessarily assume that they are bad. Because if young people like that have not been managed properly and have not been led properly, you may very well be destroying them instead of building them. So we thought to deal with what was wrong, while at the same time explaining what we are doing and trying to bring people along. Because also as a training institution, we felt it's important that where people don't have skills, we must, you know, do our best to make sure that we do that. So we sought to work by and large with as many of the people that we found in, because we really did believe, Chairperson, and I still do believe, notwithstanding my own disappointments here and there, but I still do believe most of the young people who work in that organization are not corrupt, are not part of what the problems were. But because they themselves, you pick this up in everything that you do. So when you say, okay, let's pull out the files of learning program X from year Y and scrutinize this information and reach out to these people, you can easily think that people are playing games or are part of whatever happened previously and therefore hiding things, when actually they know no better. You know, they can't, they such a deep inability to manage information, to work, to think logically, to think systematically. And therefore we felt it important that we can't throw out these young people. First of all, you can't just do it in any event, even if you wanted to do it. I think the member there mentioned the fact that it's something we can delay, that as administrator you almost have carte blanche power to do anything. I think you have a lot of powers that ordinarily individuals don't have, but I think you must still, to a large extent, and especially in terms of labor relations issues, and I'm speaking to the point of turning the organization around, in terms of labor relations issues, I think as far as possible, you need to respect the laws and to be fair in how you deal with people. That you do as much as you can to capacitate people, to support them, to get them to buy into what the organization ought to be doing, and then when all of that has failed, then you do all other drastic things that you need to be doing. And not for the benefit of this and not because we are here now, but we will actually be speaking about this even in staff meetings in the organization. Now, Chairperson, to a large extent, we are starting to see which of the people that we have are rehabilitable and are innocently been misguided prior and now are starting to operate in the normal way that the organization is supposed to. And those that will simply never change their attitude, they'll never be part of the solution. And that's what we are now, being clear of that, that's what we are now focusing on. I'm not saying it because we're here, we have already started even in discussions and things before that. So, Chair, I accept, I'm still on the point of taking long to turn around the organization. I accept the criticism, I accept that in terms of what we had planned ourselves when we came in, things are taking longer. I'm not
I'm not always sure that it could have taken shorter but been sustainable moving forward. I'm sure there are many things you could have done, cut corners and do, but I've seen institutions where administration comes, that approach is taken, 2-3 years down the line, whatever was done unravels again. We can discuss the correctness or otherwise of the approach that was taken. But I do believe, Chair, that a lot of work has been done. It might not appear in terms of performance information, because performance, as I said earlier on, one, we started late into the year to even consider implementing projects, for the very reason that we could not come in and start spending money and make it go into the same collapsed processes of management and governance and then have similar findings to before, now having been done by us who came to correct. That is the approach that we took. Again, we can debate the merits of that. Yes, mistakes have been made, especially on the financial management side of things. I think I mentioned earlier on that we have now, as a result of the shock to our own self, as a result of the audit findings, we have now solicited the services of a very reputable, very experienced, with a proven track record service provider in the form of Deloitte. The lady and the gentleman sitting behind the CFO are now with us on a short-term basis to ensure that which we are not able to complete, because as we did that, a lot of work has been done, especially on the financial management and the much more deeply technical aspects of financial management, your internal controls, all of those things, that they are now leading us to ensure that we do, to ensure that by the time the interim audit, which we will soon be preparing for, starts, we have completed all the outstanding work that we are unable to complete on our own. And yes, the member asked, yes, it is true that we do have capacity challenges in our own. The CFO here brings a lot of wealth of experience in different areas, but neither of us have worked in the technical side of running a CETA with all the deep intricacies that the other people who are doing it in other CETAs all the time for the last 10 years are doing. So yes, we're not going to deny that there were still some weaknesses, but we were clear enough and sober enough to recognize them and to do something about them, even before finalization of when we started seeing that there are some challenges. Again, Chairperson, in the next round, if more detail is required, we can get into that. We do, Chairperson and members, we do take very seriously the task. We do worry a great deal. Let me link this question. The question was, or the comment was, whether we share the concern, the deep concern at the poor performance of the organization versus, and I'll link it to the issue of cost, our salaries, the traveling deal being high and all of that. We do, Chairperson. We do a great deal. It's something that worries us a great deal. I'm not sure, once again, we could have done this any differently. As I mentioned, when you have an institution that is under administration, it's because, and in this one, much more pronounced perhaps, I think, I've not been in others, but much more pronounced than in any other. You have a situation of almost total collapse. As I said, I invite the committee, I know that the committee visits entities, I invite the committee to visit us. We have recently moved to new premises, so it might also be helpful for the committee to come and see. You had an organization, as the CFO said, of almost total collapse. Human capacity, processes, everything. Stakeholder engagement, everything. So inevitably, you will spend a lot of time and resources on your picking yourself up, which unfortunately takes resources, consumes resources. When we did the roadshow that we did, which we continue to believe, and now when we were doing, I mentioned another special project we are doing of rebranding the CETA, we had not only had redone it with our own roadshows, but the service provider that's doing that, we also gave them and set them free to speak to our stakeholders on their own. And the feedback we are getting is that it was and it still is correct the approach of bringing the CETA back to its stakeholders. Unfortunately, to do that, I mentioned that we had, so to the Honorable Member Kassim, the traveling budget that has now shot up is because the CETA was much more active in terms of what it ought to have been doing anyway prior. We went out to stakeholders, our provincial offices, as has been said correctly, so continue to visit municipalities and to support them. We have been found wanting on our ability to support with documentation. As an example, the visit to municipalities, the target was high. We believe that we our people went to these municipalities much more than we were able to prove with documentation, which we accept. That we accept, but we do know. We do know. We interact with our municipalities. We know when we approve things for people to go to places and they come back with things that need to be done. So the fact of having learned through this process in terms of documentary support of what is required does not necessarily mean that the work was not done. It's an important lesson which we have taken, but it doesn't mean that the traveling was traveling for not work or for whatever other things. But also, as I said, not just the roadshows, but all these other things that we are doing have meant that an organization that must rebuild its capacity spends a lot of time and resources on that, which will not necessarily translate into performance. And I think we have moved on the financial side of things, which we also spend a lot of time on and resources on, notwithstanding the continued failures which we are now addressing with the new intervention. Let me see the other set of things, Chair. Member Mbata, I wasn't sure I'm clear 100% on the question and the link. My having previously been linked to the office of the minister, I think to the extent that yes, I had an appreciation of the challenge, I had an appreciation of the importance of the work that we are doing, which also, and I would sometimes say to people, which also explains why I would not want to be seen to be reckless in how I do things. I think in a different life, with me having a different background in somewhat different, I may have said I believe in an approach of come in and shoot everyone and start from scratch. But I did not think it was correct, it was right in this instance, because I really believed that most of the people who are in that theater are hardworking as far as they were concerned, because they knew no better. They have not been leadership, they have not been guidance. So I take the point that it's a very serious responsibility that we believe that we are taking very seriously, that we are working as hard as we can at it, but there remain challenges. Now let me speak to, then you link your question with, now given this poor performance, number of municipalities that we support, rural municipalities, all of that, I was just checking here, I won't be able to give an exact and we can finish that. Last year, when we then started with the process of now saying, we think there's still a long way to go on restoring management and processes, but we think we are okay, we can start now to focus on the business of the organization. We approved grant funding to just about, and I say this carefully, we'll get the exact, to just about all our municipalities. I'm saying last year, November. We issued all of them with letters. We didn't want to dwell on this in terms of explaining the performance because we don't want to be seen to be passing the buck. The challenge, historical, and it continues now, we are now proposing to change the model of how the organization manages discretionary grants, is that when you do that, when you issue municipalities with grants, more often than not, they are through many different challenges that are now with them, they are unable to take up those grants. I'm sure the services CETA, at least insofar as this issue is concerned, will paint a different picture because they deal mostly, I think, with private businesses who are organized, who will pick them up with our local government sector. we give them grants, we give them the requirements, which are the basic things that the Auditor General will require of us to prove that the work has happened. Sometimes there is a need to appoint a service provider following a normal, transparent procurement process, and appoint one that is accredited, of course, for the training that must be done, and your basic other information, an application form, certified copy of the learner's ID, because it must be a South African learner who is actually alive, there must be someone there to train. And if it's a case of an unemployed, a contract that says as a municipality we will place this learner for the time that they require the workplace part of the training. Those basic things, they can't. More often than not, I can check or we can furnish the information. I know that other than their own application for discretionary grants, which we may or may not have approved, I can check. Other than that, together with many other CTAs, we have a special project. I don't know if it was reflected. We have a special project called the Department. Oakham was one of the regions. The Department took us to a whole lot of CTAs to say, let's make a big impact in this. Yes, sometimes there's a CTA. Sometimes things move slowly on our side. But more often than not, in those special projects, we can't either find the learners or find the right learners. There are always problems that right. We approved, I speak under collection, but I think it was 10 million for the OR Tambo district shortly after I arrived. It was one of those where we said, notwithstanding all other things, these are ministerial projects, we should not unduly stop them or delay them or whatever, because the CETA was not participating in any event. So we approved for OR Tambo district. To my best recollection, that project is only now starting to get off the ground. I'm sure the department, I don't mean to put the department on the spot, but because we work together and I know this thing, I even remember when I just came here, the then outgoing administrator of the services, CETA, saying to me one time, we need to both go to Oakham, Tambo, making an example, since you as a member made it, we need to both go to Oakham, Tambo, you in your new role, he was saying to me, you in your new role, responsible for local government, because I, Dr. Moon was saying, need to go and tell them that if they don't get their act together, I will reroute this funding that we've committed to them somewhere else. That made me realize that it's not just us as local government sitters who are battling with the municipality. So I'm responding to the issue of, do we support these municipalities? The answer is yes, prior, and that was what we were communicating to them. Prior to that, the CETA was seen, and that's why it was very important for me to go on the roadshow, because we had to regain the confidence of the sector. Prior to that, yes, the CETA was seen to take more of a posture of not granting grants to municipalities, which didn't make sense, because that's the sole reason why we exist, to support municipalities through skills development. So we went on this whole extensive process to regain their confidence, but to explain to them that for the system to work, we will do this, you need to do this part. Otherwise, I always say this, that we can fix the organization and make it speak and serve, but if they don't play their part, their whole system still doesn't work. Unless we move more to what we are now moving towards, managing and running the project ourselves more and more. Rural municipalities, do they contribute to our levy income? Yes. Fortunately, thankfully, all municipalities, all 278 of them, however small, however rural, they contribute. They pay levies to the CETA. The only area where we still have some challenges is with some of the municipal entities that are still not supposed to be paying levies to also the CETA, but are not. But in the municipalities, you know, as entities themselves, I shall go to Kala, no, they do. So that was in terms of the support we give to them. That will help me if I'm missing out on things. Yes, leadership and not getting support from my executive.
If I may request that you become short and to the point, so that you can finish. We're running out of time. We still have got this other presentation, and thereafter we've got a decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. I think by and large we do, Chairperson. I think more than anything, yes, perhaps there have been mistakes and perhaps there have been areas where accountability could have been enforced more. That I'm first to admit. But Chair, as I said before, I think the relatives are working as hard as they can. We all are. I think the people at the CETA, to the best of their knowledge, as I said earlier, these are young people who, by and large, who have not been guided, who do not have the skills that they need to be able to do their work properly. So the challenge is there without a doubt. But I don't think, especially I'm responding directly to the issue of am I getting the right support from the executives. I think to the best of people's abilities and intentions, I think yes, Chair. Are there still challenges? I'm the first one to admit. I'm having very different and difficult conversations as we speak. But I do believe that to the best of ability of people, indeed they are. We are all trying to move this thing fast as we can. Oh, yes. The chairperson is making a... The chairperson's issue about the structure and the shares, cost and all of that. Just to maybe explain, Chair, maybe I was not very clear. When we came in, there was a structure which was, I don't know how long it had been in place. It was not a structure that was not structured. And it was not structured properly. It did not or build into itself the requisite capacity that is needed. And I think, as I said, in terms of the challenge, in terms of the work we need to do to support municipalities, we all agree that it would be ideal to have very big provincial offices that have enough people to go and spend all the time in the municipalities supporting them and all of that. So that was the first thing. It was very flimsy, for want of a better expression. Then we worked and we consulted and we did all of this. We adopted the structure that is now in the organogram. When we say it's ambitious, Chair, what we are saying is that it is, I think I said this earlier on, it is what we believe needs to be in place to do the mandate that we have as an organization. It is responsive to the challenge at hand. However, that then makes it big naturally. It has lots of positions, which means that when we say it's tripled, I think the intention was to say theoretically, what we mean is that if we were to fill it at the same time, fill all the positions, the salary bill would triple. That's why I was saying we are then forced to phase it in. That's why, for instance, the question always arises, and I'm, again, the correctness of the approach and the decision we can discuss, but there are positions that we have not moved deliberately fast to fill because we are avoiding the issue of cost. I'll make an example. As part of the administrative team, the people who came in together with me on contract, and one of them is both an advisor but also runs and helps with the HR, the lady who sees Cookie Field, runs the HR unit. I therefore took a position that says we must fill this position, we must run the process, but to the extent that you are here earning a salary and doing the work, we will fill this position as and when we are exiting so that we don't at any one time where we can help it pay or have two people or positions that are running a similar thing. And that's the logic, and we come with it. So also, I guess another question becomes, then why not do away with one and whatever? That could be, but there are things that then the new person may not be able to immediately deal with. An example is all the labor relations issues. The HR person who's part of the administrator's team, who has been with the administrator from almost day one, is able to run almost independently with the labor relations things and go to the CCMA and stay there and do what needs to be done. But if it was a new appointed HR manager, they may not be able to do that, which may also compromise the work that we are doing. So in some respects, we've had to make some tactical judgments to say, yes, it's important. By the time we are done with the work, all of the positions must be filled. But to the extent that we can save the organization some money and phase things in, we will do that. Others, we are working as fast as we can with the limitations that I spoke about earlier on. When we are forensic, I spoke to all these questions. So I'm not sure if I missed any specific big area. I'm more than happy to come back to it.
Your monthly progress report, which should have seen to the institution achieving on their targets. Remember, in terms of the AGIS report, you've achieved 86. You have not achieved 86% of the target.
Yes. No. Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I was thinking about that. The monthly reports, and the department can also comment on this. The administrator's monthly reports are on the administrator's intervention, on the contract of the administrator, which is more the specific things that are listed there, the things that the administrator has to do. The normal, which happens in all CETAs, reporting on performance information now, on what the CETA is doing on performance, happens quarterly through what are called quarterly monitoring reports that we submit to the department. And yes, they do point out, as we have been saying, they do point out, and we do put in the strategies. As I said, when we, for instance, the reason why, and I think it's important to clarify so that members can see, the reason why we report low achievements on a lot of these things, but are able to say, but now, by now, on IS, at the close of financial year, we were still zero, but by now, that 2,000 people are being trained. That is because, as I explained, when we came in April, up to about September, we hardly touched projects inevitably because of the demand of administration. Then when we started, we advertised for projects, we advertised for bursaries. When we started all of the work of now attending to performance information, we were able to achieve something. Others, in terms of contracting and others, happened after the close of the financial year, but hasn't been part of that. And I think that was the shift. We were talking with the administrator, with the former administrator, now chairperson of the services CETA, about the inevitability of that process, because you could not come in and start spending money using the same systems that are almost collapsed. So you had to do that. So the reason is not to say, you know, just to make it sound nice, when by the time we started project implementation or initiation, then unfortunately some of the things were closed after the close of the financial year, which is why we are able to say they are running higher, the RTL in the free state, all of those things. But we can't, obviously, they did not happen in the financial year, so we can't report them in the financial year. I don't know if that clarifies the chair. Thank you.
Hey, I'd like to consult with the honorable members. The time now is 12:30. And I know we all are still planning, you know, to ask more questions. But the problem I have now is just a time question. So you must then advise me. How do you want us to move forward? Can you maybe submit all your questions in writing? Then we then allow, we will then forward them to the administrator for a written response, but also so that we can allow this other CETA to present. So I am in your hands. Remember, this is our meeting. Ms. Killian?
Chairperson, I think that is a good suggestion, because we have to also come to the services CETA. So I think what we do is whatever vagueness we still have, if we can pose the questions in writing and then submit it as a committee. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. No, that's fine. I'm sure the support for that. Is this proposal seconded? Yes, seconded. Thank you very much. Mr. Mandela, thank you for the responses. I don't want to lie to you. There's still more questions. Some of the responses have not been adequately responded to. So, but unfortunately, I was going to allow them to